Jagannatha Swami, Rupam, beauty, Tapadana. O best of the sages, performing austerity, Tapacharatam, of persons engaged in executing austerities and penances. Tapadnam, which dismantles the austerities. Dismantles means tears apart. He certainly, etat, this, to, indeed, kena, by what? Tapasa, austerity, bhavata, by you, upalabdham, achieved, chartum, to execute, tapaha, austerity, arhasi, you ought, maya saha, with me, mitra, my dear friend, mayam, unto me, Kimba, or maybe, prasidati, is pleased. Saha, he, vai, certainly. Bhava-bhavanaha, the creator of this universe. May, with me. Translation. O best among those performing austerities, where did you get this wonderful beauty that dismantles the austerities performed by others? Where have you learned this art? What austerity have you undergone to achieve this beauty, my dear friend? I desire that you join me to perform austerity and penance, for it may be that the creator of the universe, Lord Brahma, being pleased with me, has sent you to become my wife. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Agnidra appreciated the wonderful beauty of Purvachati. Indeed, he was surprised to see such exceptional beauty, which must have been the result of past austerities and penances. He therefore asked the girl whether she had achieved such beauty just to break the penances and austerities of others. He thought that Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, might have been pleased with him and might therefore have sent her to become his wife. He requested Purvachiti to become his wife so that together they could perform austerities and penances in family life. In other words, a suitable wife helps her husband perform penances and austerities in household life if both of them are on the same elevated platform of spiritual understanding. Without spiritual understanding, husband and wife cannot be equally situated. Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, is interested in good progeny. Therefore, unless he is pleased, one cannot get a suitable wife. In fact, Lord Brahma is worshipped in marriage ceremonies. In India, even today, wedding invitations are still issued with a picture of Lord Brahma on the face of the card. So, Rupam tapo danata pascharatam tapogdam. Ye tattu kena tapasa bhavato palabdham chartum taporhasi maya saha mitramayam kimva prasidati savai bhavabhavano me. So, Omagana Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurveda Maha. So it's a warning for all you brahmacharis not to worship Lord Brahma. Anyway, so the point here is that Agnidra is not thinking, let me just like have illicit sex with this girl and enjoy her. He is thinking in a very Vedic way of engaging in proper household life according to the Vedic system. So this is because he's actually a devotee. You know, he's not a demon. Whereas the demons, like Ravana, they think something different. They just kidnap girls and enjoy them. Actually, even one time, Ravana raped a lady, one of the Heavenly Society girls, Ramba. And when he did that, he got cursed by her husband, Nalakuvara, that if he ever tried that again with a lady, Hare Krishna, if he ever tried that again with a lady, then his head would split into pieces and he would die immediately. So that's why Ravana didn't force himself upon Sita Devi, because he had that curse. So anyway, so Agnidra is not just like some lusty dog, you know, lusting after some lady, you know, like people on the street here. Agnidra is actually doing things, or wants to do things, in a proper Vedic way. So let's discuss, and as I mentioned today, we're going to discuss proper household life. So those of you who are householders can listen to this, so understand how to behave yourselves. So first I'm going to start telling a story from one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, Jiva Dharma. So you can actually see a contrast between proper household life and Grihamedi life. Grihamedi life is called Grihamedi life because the example is given with this word Medi, which means like a bull that is tied by the nose. In other words, that's how they control bulls in India sometimes. They put this ring in the nose. It's pretty heavy. I mean, I wouldn't want to have that sort of ring in the nose. Sometimes the ladies having rings in the noses too. But anyway, that's not for controlling them. So the bull has a ring in the nose, and they just lead him around with this ring. I used to work with cows and bulls, so I know what it is. Sometimes even if they didn't have a ring, you would have a one of these little tweezers that would go into their nose, and you could lead them in this way. So in other words, Grihamedi means completely absorbing the material energy and doing things for one sense gratification. But we are interested in grahasas. So let's tell a story about a Grihamedi from the Jiva Dharma. So once upon a time, many years ago, there was this couple. They were a Grihamedi couple. And the man's name was Chandidas, and his wife's name was Damayanti. And they were engaged in business. Nothing wrong with business, but anyway. But they were engaged in business, and they never fed any Vaishnavas. You know, if a Vaishnava came to the door, they'd say, "Get away, you bum. Get out of here." And so they were all just accumulating money, just very greedy, burying money to save for the future, you know, just like thinking money is the goal of life. You know, so much money do I have today, so much more will I have tomorrow. He's my enemy, I've conquered him. Like the demoniac type consciousness. All right. And they were getting older. And they had trouble. They could no longer engage in business. And they had three sons. But because they had set the example of being Grihamedis, their sons were actually just as bad or even worse than them. You know, so they raised three little Grihamedi sons. And the sons had gotten married, and the sons, by their association, turned their wives into little Grihamedinis. That means female Grihamedis, anyway. So there are three couples of Grihamedis, along with the original couple, Damayanti and Chandidas, the husband and wife. So then the husband and wife, they were feeling somewhat neglected by their children, because their children were just Grihamedis. They didn't care for the parents. And the children had entered into business themselves, following the footsteps of their parents, and were just, you know, neglecting Vaishnavas, you know, really nasty brats. So they wanted their children to care for them. Naturally, you get older, you need people to care for you. You know, to take care of you, cook for you, you know, and make your bed, you know, everything like that, like sannyasis have. So, you know, they can no longer care for themselves. Anyway, so they said to their children, "We really want you to care for us, And we'll give you an incentive, in other words, a promise, that whoever cares for us the most, we have some hidden wealth. And you could have it. And so he thought, you know, this is how you deal in society, how you deal with your children. You offer them some little money, and then they'll be loving to you. Sometimes, even in Grihamedi life, the husband is thinking, if I offer my wife a diamond ring or something like that, she'll smile at me or something. That's called bribery. You know, smiling should be without offering diamond rings and everything like that. So, or anything, there should be loving exchange, even in household life or whatever relationship. It shouldn't be based upon monetary. So anyway, this couple was offering their children this. And the children had a meeting after this. They all met with each other. What are we going to do about mom and dad? They have this hidden wealth, and they want us to be kind to them. But it's, you know, we're not really in that mood of being kind. So we have a plan. And our plan is, they talked about their plan, is we'll send them to Mayapur in pilgrimage. In the meantime, we'll just like break into the house, find the hidden wealth, and share it with each other. Nice, loving kids. So whatever way you act, the kids actually learn that. You know, if the husband and wife fight, then the kids will learn to fight, etc. like that. So they went in a very sweet way, you know, hiding their real intentions to their parents. And they said, Mom, Dad, we want you to go on pilgrimage, and we'll send this nice Vaishnav lady to take care of you, and we really care about you. We love you. And the parents were thinking, oh, our children's hearts have changed. It's so nice to have loving children. Okay, so then the parents went on pilgrimage. They went towards Mayapur. And halfway there, you know, they got halfway to Mayapur, they got news that the kids had broken into their home, dug up in the earth, found the hidden wealth, and were just like enjoying life or whatever with the wealth. And the parents felt so, oh, how can our children do this? But they love us. They really, and so they thought, let's go home and just like be engaged in the loving relationships again with our children. Actually, the children hated them. They were just using the parents. And sometimes you find that the children, even modern day, they kill the parents for an inheritance or something like that. They're just waiting for them to die. When will they die? So anyways, they were thinking of going back, but this nice Vaishnavi who was accompanying them says, what are you, crazy? If you go back, they'll kill you. And they somehow or other got a little sense. And they said, yeah, you're right. They're going to kill us. So anyway, so they proceeded to Mayapur, and they set up house in Kuliagram. Actually, they had no money at that particular point. But because they were Vaishyas by mentality, they opened up a grocery store. You know, somehow or other, you know, if someone has business in their blood, they can do business anywhere. You know, just like I saw many years ago, there was one devotee who took sannyas. He's no longer sannyas. And when he would visit the different temples, he would come with all of his things to sell to the temples. He would open up his jacket and there'd be incense there and things like that. You know, the first thing he'd go to the temple president and said, my dear sir, we have incense for you, we have saris for you, we have jewelry for the girls in the temple. What would you like to buy? Gold? And anyway, because if one has Vaishya blood, you can't take it out of him. He'll go to the forest and then he'll think of chopping down the trees and selling the trees. It's just like, that's a Vaishya. You know, you can't change someone's nature. And that's one of the teachings in the Bhagavad Gita. Because Arjuna was not a Vaishya, he was Kshatriya. So Krishna said, you have to work according to your nature. Otherwise, you're going to be forced to fight according to your nature. But now you can fight for me. They opened a grocery store, but they had learned their lesson about what the love was in this world. You know, the love in this world, the material love is, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. You know, it's like business exchange. Whereas the spiritual love is, you know, I want to serve you. And it doesn't matter, like Krishna, Lord Chaitanya states in the last verse of the Shikshashika, you know, you can crush me by your embrace, Krishna, you can do anything and everything, you remain my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. So devotees are also meant to have those relationships. So this couple learned their lesson, and they began to host Vaishnavas and gave, you know, practically all the money they were making away to the Vaishnavas. And in this way, they got the mercy. They became grihasthas rather than grihamedis. And later on, they got the instructions about household life, some aspects about household life, from the great personalities, the Babajis, who lived there in Kuligram or in the Madhavi Grove, which was near there. Anyway, this is a wonderful story. Jiva Dharma is a wonderful book. And then all the aspects of devotional service, beginning with sadhana, avaiti, raganuga, bhava, prema, etc., are elaborated on by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in a story form. You know, it's very easy to digest all these things. So, very wonderful, wonderful literature. So, in the future, when you've perfected your study of Srila Prabhupada's books, devotees should read this Jiva Dharma. In the future, I may give a course on it. But it's such a lengthy book. To give a course on it would take probably months. Months of daily recitation. So, anyway, so they got instruction about household life. And the great devotees told them, actually, there's two types of devotees. And both are devotees equally. There's renounced devotees and householders. And the householders are supposed to follow three different basic principles. And Prabhupada also elaborated on that, and later on we'll talk about a more elaborate description of these principles from the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So they said the first thing is a householder should have jiva doya. Jiva doya means mercy towards all living entities. Now, generally, the Grihamedis, they're just merciful towards entities that are related with their bodies. You know, the expansions. Pumsastriya mituni bhava metam tayor reguntya ho togra kshetra sutapta vitara janasya moho yam hamameti. You know, the men and women get together, there's these expansions that come out. Of course, they're called children. And also the home and car and iPhone and everything like that. These are all expansions. So, but jiva doya means compassionate to all jivas. Later on in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj describes how one in household life should consider even the insects, snakes, monkeys, just like one's children. Pretty interesting, isn't it? I mean, of course, that doesn't mean you take care of them in the same way as your children. Not that you get a little bed for the insects. A little crib, you know, or rockabye insect on the treetop. You know, anyway, so it's not that you do that. But you take care of them. You're merciful towards all living entities. So that's the first point. And the second instruction he gave for the householders is they should have nama ruchi, a taste for chanting. So Prabhupada even went further and said that the householders should be inviting people to their homes and have regular kirtan, sanghas. We call that sanghas. A taste for chanting, and that's done by regularly following the rules and regulations and avoiding the 10 offenses and serving the Vaishnavas, etc., like that. And then the third instruction he gave was Vaishnava Seva, that the householder should regularly serve advanced Vaishnavas. So this is an instruction for household life. And then he said, only if someone wants to be renounced, this is for you brahmacharis who want to be renounced, he said, only those people who are fully engaged in internal activities can be renounced from this world. What that means, he says there's two types of devotees. There's devotees who are engaged in only external activities, and there's devotees who engage in external activities and internal activities. So only those who have their life, you know, their complete life, internally. Internally means not that you're just in a coma, or you're just like unconscious. You know, you can say, you know, last night I was sleeping, I had my internal life. You know, so yes, that's one sense, that's an internal life. But here we're talking about internal life, realizing one's spiritual identity, which is a very high platform. You know, in other words, just being absorbed in devotion to Krishna is, you know, something going on internally that you usually don't reveal to people. Like Lord Chaitanya, usually he did not reveal these things unless they came out somehow or other because of his ecstatic emotions. Prabhupada usually did not reveal his internal life. He was asked one time, "Do you ever feel great separation from your spiritual master?" And Prabhupada said, "That question you do not need to ask." And sometimes devotees, they try to guess on the pure devotee's internal life, and it's not appropriate. Sometimes Prabhupada, they try to guess, like, what was Prabhupada's rasa with Krishna? And it's just not appropriate to try to enter into that realm. So anyway, so if one has fully engaged in internal life, then one can be renounced. Otherwise, one should be in the household life, and that's like, they describe like a school by which one can gradually elevate oneself and become Krishna conscious. And of course, Lord Chaitanya taught Kiva Vipra Kiva Nyasi Shudrakina Noye Krishna Tattva Veda Se Guru Hoy. It doesn't matter if one is brahmachari, householder, vanaprastha, sannyas. If he knows the science of Krishna, he or she knows the science of Krishna, let's say, then they can become gurus, Se Guru Hoy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually invited so many householders to become gurus, and there were so many householder gurus in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya. So many. So many, like Srinivas Acharya, one of the great acharyas, was householder. So anyway, so there was no impediment as long as the householders followed their particular dharma. And then the final instruction was, you know, avoid premature renunciation, because premature renunciation is done because one is expecting honor. And we see that in our movement, that yeah, people may take sannyasa, I want people to respect me. We want people to offer obeisances to me. And of course Lord Chaitanya cautions about that. He says Trinadapi Sumi Chainat Purari Vasahishnana Manida Manadena Kirtignya Sadhari. One should be more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. So these are the instructions he gave. So now we'll talk about the instructions that Pallad Maharaj gives. I mean, it's actually Narada Muni giving, sorry. It's Narada Muni giving in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 7th canto, chapter 14, about ideal family life. It's a very important chapter. So there's many different aspects here, and I've written them down so that I remember them. But I have about 15 different aspects that one should be conscious of. First of all, most important is that whatever results are there in your household life, whether it's money or your family or whatever, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, Manasa Geha Geha Deha Geha Yokishamor Aprilam Tuya Nanda Kishore. That whatever I have, my house, my wife, my family, my mind, you know, whatever, is yours, Krishna. To understand the principle of Isha Vasha. Prabhupada said this is the principle upon which the Varnashram or the Vedic society is based. That everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. Isha Vasha Dham Sarvam Yadkincha Jagajam Jagat Tena Chiktena Bunjita Madgurdha Kushasvidhanam. And that verse from the Isha Upanishad is actually pretty much an instruction for those in the household order of life. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and people are given a quota by Krishna in their lives. And so one should utilize that quota in Krishna consciousness and not be greedy over more than what is your quota. Like someone may have the quota of having a very inexpensive car. Another one may have the quota of a Mercedes. And so you don't get envious of someone you know, I'd really like to be, if it's not your quota. With minimum endeavor, if Krishna sends something, yes, you use it in his service. But you don't over-endeavor. Like we hear the instruction by Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī in the Upadeśamrita. Acha hara prayasas cha pajalpa nimagraha. Things that impede our devotional service. That is, over-collecting, overeating, you know, over-endeavoring in Krishna consciousness, or even sometimes we find we may over-endeavor in some sort of project that we're doing for Krishna. You know, we, as they say, bite off more than you can chew. Or you're, let's say your mind or tongue is bigger than your stomach, something like that. So, in other words, we should know what we can do for Krishna, keeping our sadhana. Because if you do try to do so much and you neglect your sadhana, then that's over-endeavor and to cause a fall down from devotional service. So the second principle that is presented by Narada Muni is that one should associate regularly with saintly persons and serve them. So that's very important. Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sanghas, like this. That one should continually associate with advanced people. Of course, association is best accomplished by the hearing process. So sometimes people may say, well, there's no sadhus around for me to associate with. We got to invite more sadhus here. So you can associate with sadhus even if you don't have to be in the physical location, even if you're all alone preaching somewhere, by hearing, reading, like you're reading Srila Prabhupada's books. That's association with Prabhupada. It's not different. The vani of the spiritual master, or the vani of a great devotee, is non-different than the great devotee. In fact, it's the most important aspect of a great devotee. Like I regularly listen to Srila Prabhupada's classes and conversations, and I feel no different than when Prabhupada was on the planet. And of course, also I watch videos of Prabhupada and stuff like that. But so there's the vani, and so we're very much connected. So one should do that, even in, of course, brahmacharis too should do that. It's not simply reserved for households. A lot of these instructions, perhaps most of the instructions, are for everybody, but they're specifically focused on those in the household order of life. The third instruction is that you, to be successful in household life, this is basically only for the householders, you have to act attached but be detached. That's an interesting instruction. How do you do that? Narada Muni says that even though people may say so many things, you just like, you say yes, 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 but then you do what you want to do. That's a direct verse from the Bhagavatam says that. Yes, 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 yes. And you do what you want to do. Or in interactions, you know, of course, attachment should be there for someone's spiritual advancement. We're not saying that you treat everybody or you think of everybody like a stone. Like Vidya, Vanya, Sampani, Brahmani, Gavihashni, Shuni, Chayiva, Swavaki, Cha, Padidas, Samadarshana. That basically, you're attached, let's say if they're children, husband, wife, whatever, you're attached that they become Krishna conscious. You can transform the attachment. It's not necessary to give up attachment. It's necessary to transform the attachment. Just like if you have a child, you're attached, I want them to be Krishna conscious. Not that you're attached, I want them to become some big PhD or something like that so they can make a lot of money and give me the money and take care of me in the old age and give me happiness so I can brag about them. Like my mother would often say, you've got to become a doctor. And I say, why? So you can make me proud. I said, that's not my business in life to make you proud. My business is Hare Krishna. Anyway, so I didn't exactly say that, but that was what I was thinking. So another instruction for householders and people in general, insofar as possible, use natural products. That's interesting, isn't it? Natural products means fresh food, you know, rather than canned food or frozen food or things like that, and you know, like wearing cotton, if possible, instead of polyester, you know, just natural products. Being more natural, ecological, that's very much in tune with this whole ecological movement nowadays. But that's the instruction of Narada Muni, actually, to be ecological. And the next instruction he gives is just possess or utilize the minimum what you need. Now, everybody's minimum is different. Someone may need, let's say, a bigger house or more facility, and someone may need less facility, just like in sleep. Someone may need to sleep only 4 hours a night. Other people, I was just reading this biography of Gaur Govinda Maharaj. It's a very nice biography that devotees gave me. And he was like sleeping like 1 or 2 hours a night, or resting 1 or 2 hours a night. And then writing, translating books, preaching, developing the center there. I mean, so many. He was a great devotee. Actually, in his childhood, one time he was offering food to the deity, and then he discovered there was a little boy who was Krishna stealing. And he was running after Krishna. And the adults actually saw it for a second. They saw him running after Krishna. Anyways, that's a pretty great devotee. You could do that. You know, I was running after Maya when I was young. Anyway, so... but he, so... anyway, so... everybody's minimum is different. He may need like 1 hour of sleep, 2 hours of sleep a night, and we may need six or seven or whatever it is a night. You just have to be practical. You don't criticize people. But you know what your minimum is. What you do is you reduce until you get to the point where it's not working. You know, you're getting sick, or you don't have enough rest, or you're getting spaced out, or you're getting accidents as you're driving your car. Hopefully you haven't died. And then you know you've gone beyond what your minimum is. So there's ways to figure that out. The next one is that we already talked about animals, treating the animals like your own children. The next one is not engaging in any ugra karmic activities to maintain yourself. Ugra karmic means activities like opening a slaughterhouse or something like that, something that's against the regulated principles. You should engage in some activities that are conducive to Krishna consciousness. I know devotees nowadays, they have to take so many jobs in the city, but insofar as possible, one has to be very careful to not contribute to sinful activities. Next one is perhaps one of the most difficult, that one should offer their wife, if one's married, to serve others. Not in an improper, illicit way, but just to serve others. In other words, if someone comes to your house, then you and your wife should be serving these people come to your house, rather than just sitting down and enjoying and letting them eat after you've eaten. Like Prabhupada said, when he was giving instructions to householders, one householder wanted to find out from him, he'd just gotten married, how should he interact with his wife? He was asking this question to figure out what sort of romantic things he could do with his wife, basically. That was his intention. But Prabhupada answered in a different way. Prabhupada said, before you eat, you have to call out 3 times. If anyone's hungry, please let them come and eat. And we see in Prabhupada's life, his father was hosting guests, at least 3 or 4 sadhus, every day. So that's a householder's business, to host people. Not only to feed one's family, but to feed so many people. And the householder in the Vedic system is considered to be the stomach of society. Not that he just eats for society, but the stomach provides nutrition for the rest of society. You know, if they take that out of context and think, householder is the stomach, wow, I get to eat for the society. Sometimes it's mentioned that a Brahmin eats on behalf of Lord Vishnu, so, but that doesn't mean a Brahmin's only duty is to eat. It means we serve a Brahmin, we serve a Vaishnava, and he's accepting on behalf of Lord Vishnu. So, the next one, is he should only eat prasadam and not eat in restaurants. That may come as a shock to some of you. You can eat in the Hare Krishna restaurants, fine. But Prabhupada was actually very strict about this principle of not eating food cooked by non-devotees, because he said the mind will become wicked. And he gave the example of Grandfather Bhishma and Dronacharya, who were eating food cooked in the kitchen that was used to prepare food for Duryodhana. In other words, they probably had a bunch of rakshasas cooking. So because of that, Grandfather Bhishma's consciousness became polluted in spite of being a Mahajan, and Dronacharya also, in spite of being a great devotee of the Lord, his consciousness became polluted, and they became possessed by demons. In the full Mahabharata, we were talking about the Mahabharata last night, it mentions that demons told Duryodhana that we will possess. You know what it means, demon possession or ghostly possession? They said we will possess Grandfather Bhishma and Dronacharya so that they will fight enthusiastically on the wrong side. Or for them it was the right side. You know, for Duryodhana it was the right side. So, so one has to be very careful what you eat. In the Vedic system, or in Ayurveda, it is understood that what you eat gets transformed to blood. It's like an echo from the other room. What you eat gets transformed to your blood, and the blood is the carrier of consciousness. So when you eat something impure, cooked by someone impure, your consciousness becomes affected. And even scientifically that can be understood. There was one scientific experiment where people took water and they were thinking different things as they were holding the water. Some of them were thinking love, love, love. You know, like that song I heard last night, All You Need Is Love. Someone had it on their mobile phone. So, and others were thinking hate, hate, hate. And then the scientists actually did like a microscopic scopic examination of the water crystals. And the crystals looked different. They looked beautiful when people were thinking love, love, love. And when people were thinking hate, 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 they were just like all in disarray. So even scientifically, the consciousness of someone who is dealing with liquid or food affects the molecules. And that affects the energies in that particular food. So when you eat food cooked by non-devotees, you are getting their consciousness. In other words, Prabhupada said, you become demoniac. So I know the tongue is very strong. We talk about that every day, isn't it? Dharma deji vayati, lobha vayas durmati. Probably you don't know the translation of that. It means the tongue is very, most of all the senses, the tongue is most voracious and uncontrollable. The tongue is like, sometimes I use the example like the tail of the dog that's wagging the dog. If you actually have to picture a dog with a tail, and the dog is going back and forth and the tail is staying in one position. Usually the tail is going back and forth and the dog is staying in one position. But in the case of this craziness, the dog is going back and forth. So in other words, usually our tongue, we use our tongue. But in the case of someone who's controlled by the tongue and eating all sorts of nonsense, then he's going back and forth in search of happiness from the tongue. He's just looking, where is the happiness from the tongue? I am the servant, tongue das. So the householder should basically, and the brahmachari, this is meant for everybody, of course, should just be careful what they eat. I know when I go anyplace, I have to know who is cooking if I'm going to eat. You know, sometimes people say, you know, go to Vrindavan, and they say, oh, go to the MVT restaurant. Well, if I'm going to eat anything there, I'd have to interview all the cooks. Find out what their spiritual position is, whether they're smoking beedis or not. Beedis are like the Indian variety of cigarettes. It's cheaper. And and then we'll see whether I'm going to eat what's cooked there. And that's one reason why I don't get sick in India. Because I'm careful where I eat, what I eat, who is cooked, like that. So we should be like that, and that's a householder's duty too, according to Narada Muni. So another instruction is the householder, and this is actually Prabhupada's instruction, should as far as possible come to the temple and help with the deity worship. Prabhupada said that's a first class householder. Second class lives near the temple and also helps the temple, has his own little deities. And third class lives far away with their own deities. And of course, sometimes it's unavoidable that someone lives far away. But insofar as possible, the householder should engage in daily puja. And it's preferable if they can come to the temple and worship the deities in the temple instead of getting too much into their own personal deities. I know sometimes some devotees like have thousands of shilas, you know, or millions or something like that. And it's like, wow. You know, so it's better to come and help with the deity worship in the temple because these deities are meant for preaching. I mean, of course, I understand, you know, I travel with my own little shilas too, but I'm going to the temple and worshiping the deities in the temple. You know, I'm traveling. So in general, the householder should be concentrating on the deity worship in the temple. When Prabhupada was on the planet, practically none of the householders had deities. There's only one householder I knew who had deities that got permission from Prabhupada. The rest were actually serving the deities in the temple. So that's also an injunction. Another injunction listed by Narada Muni is feed Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. We mentioned that before. Another one is perform the samskaras. These are different reformatory processes that are performed at different stages of household life and your children's lives. Like there's the Garbhadan samskara for having good children. There's a samskara for when you send your kid to school, when he picks up the pen or the chalk for the first time. There's the, ultimately, there's the antyeshti, which is the death ceremony. So all these are recommended for the householders. And finally, visit temples of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in service along with Vaishnavas. So these are the instructions for household life. And I noticed not too many brahmacharis here this morning. So... But also it's good for brahmacharis to understand that household life is not simply some romantic fling. It's a very serious thing and requires a lot of endeavor. And basically, mostly one is struggling for to maintain. It's a struggle nowadays. And practically a lot of the householders I speak to here in Slovenia and all around the world are just struggling just to feed their children and pay the rent. You know, the devotees come to me and they just tell me their difficulties. You know, very little salary, how to maintain it. And even we preach in countries like Serbia, the devotees don't have any excess money to help support a center. Like Dharma here is trying to get together, you know, enough money to rent a place in Belgrade, which would only cost 150 euros a month, right? And I said, well, that should be easy. He said, no. I said, you just get 10 euros from each devotee. He said, no, they don't even have that money, right? So it's a struggle. So your brahmachari should understand, it's a struggle. It's definitely a struggle. One has to be very dedicated year after year like this. So anyway, so any questions about that? About any of the points we made in class? Today, also I want to mention, today is the disappearance day of Devananda Pandit. He was a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Originally, he committed an offense against Srivas Thakur by having him kicked out of his Bhagavatam class because Srivas Thakur was showing a lot of ecstasy. Later on, Srivas Thakur forgave him because, and Lord Chaitanya forgave Devananda Pandit because Devananda Pandit served another devotee of Lord Chaitanya named Prakeshwara Pandit by protecting him during the kirtan. So today is his disappearance day. He's a great Vaishnava, associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So any questions or comments about any of the points I made? Yeah.
You said consciousness of cook low in this food.
Yeah.
But in prasadam too? Or
yes. And also, if the consciousness isn't right, Krishna won't accept. And Krishna is we have to understand Krishna is a person. Just like, you know, I'm a person, I hope. And if someone... You know, let's say someone is serving me, cooking for me. You know, I have some devotees who cook for me. And they say, it's time for prasadam. I say, okay, very nice. You know, they've offered it and everything. And then they say, here's your food, Gurudev. Don't eat too much. Because we want the remnants. You know, I would say, I'm not going to eat this. You know, get it away from me. I don't care how hungry I am. I'm not going to eat this. It has to be offered with the right consciousness, isn't it? And so, certainly when we're serving the guests, we should have the right consciousness too. So they, Prabhupada said the food should be so tasty that even, this is actually a hint for the cooks, apart from the consciousness. He said, even if someone has no hunger, they'll eat it. And then Prabhupada was criticizing the devotees at one point where they were preparing prasadam that was really tasteless. He said, this food the dogs won't even eat. He was chastising. There's a recording of that I was listening to the other day. And he says, you are preparing food, then even if you're hungry, you won't eat it. Instead, the devotees should prepare prasadam so even if people are not hungry, they'll want to eat it. But yes, it's the consciousness, and Krishna may not accept. I mean, I've seen sometimes, especially with Radha and Krishna deities, where things are much stricter, that the pujari will go on the altar after making the offering, you know, to pick the deity plates up, and you'll find them all on the ground. That the deities will just like throw them on. You know, nobody's gone in on the altar. Nobody's gone in the deity room, but all the food is on the ground. How did that happen? There wasn't an earthquake. Is that Krishna just said, you know, hell with you, I'm not going to eat what you cook. And so then the devotees, they're eating boga. So Krishna doesn't have to accept. So everything is dependent on consciousness. So anyway, that's important in cooking. I think to protect our own consciousness, we should be very careful about that, because it's, material world is very dangerous. There's a lot of things that can bewilder us or attract us in this world. And unless we're careful, we, just like Grandfather Bhishma, we can develop demoniac consciousness. It's a fact. You know, don't think that you're not prone to that, that you're aloof from that particular thing. So I'm extremely careful. I mean, sure, I'd like to eat everything. Like Prabhupada said, you Western boys and girls, you'll eat any damn thing. In the beginning, there was a donut shop right next to 26 Second Avenue. And the devotees would go there to eat there. And then Prabhupada would walk by there. And the devotees, when they saw Prabhupada coming, they'd sink down in their seats. So Prabhupada wouldn't see them. Is he gone yet? You know, like that. So it was a rule. I mean, Prabhupada posted rules. I don't know if you have this posted in this temple, like the rules for the temple. It's over there, you know. So, you know, those rules are important for everybody, for householders too. Householders, brahmacharis, sannyasis, everybody. It's not. I remember just one funny story about that. When I first started traveling, this is 1972, I think, whatever, before any of you were even conceived by your parents, when you were in your last lives, when you were old people. Maybe I even ran into you. So I was a brahmachari assistant for a devotee who had just taken sannyas. I can mention his name. It was Sri Dandana Maharaj. And so he told me, they said, now that you're traveling with a sannyasi and I'm a sannyas, we don't have to be so strict with this rising early anymore. Offering food, you know, we can just like take a bag of boga and go Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. And we can buy bread and we can buy salad dressing. You know salad dressing? Salad dressing. Anyway, the stuff you put on the salad from the store. So I thought, this is great, no more strict Krishna consciousness. I'd evolve, you know. You know, because one of the most difficult things when I joined the movement was waking up early. So I thought, you know, we can wake up at 8. Whew! What a relief. Instead of waking up at some ungodly hour of the morning, like 4 o'clock in the morning. Anyways, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, I've just been in the movement 2 years or something. So, and he was, and I say, this is great, you know, traveling with sannyasi, just like, this is great. And so then, after a few weeks, we noticed our consciousness was going down. We started yelling at each other. So, it was very hard to get your rounds. I always got my rounds done, but it was very hard. When you're waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's very hard to get your rounds done. Because during the day, you're doing things. And so I was having to chant my rounds from 10 to 12 at night, which wasn't a pleasant experience. And so after a while, we found our consciousness going down, and then we thought, oh my God, we're becoming contaminated. Even though we were vegetarians, it's not that we were just like going and buying McDonald's or anything. But we were vegetarians. So we found our consciousness becoming contaminated, so then we got ourselves one of these little stoves, you know, portable stoves. You probably use them on traveling Sankirtan, you know, little things like this. And then we started to prepare dal, rice, and chapatis every day. Even though sometimes I had to cook while he was driving. Which is quite an experience. I don't know if any of you had to do this, you know, in a van. The van was turning corners, you know. I was holding on to the pots and the flames were there. And I had to roll chapatis on the wheel well of the... You know, the back of a van, there's a thing that goes over the rear wheel. So that was the only platform I had. So I was rolling chapatis and I said, slow down! And then we did that and the consciousness was all right then. It went up again. And then we started getting up early too, which was nice. Which is nice. We were staying in college dormitories because we didn't have any money for hotels or even campgrounds. Even if we stayed in the campground, we'd park outside the campground and wait until we woke up and then drove in the morning, and so we wouldn't have to pay the payment at the campground. Anyway, it's an interesting time in my life. And but we still cook for ourselves. So the consciousness remained high. So that was my experience. And I would never eat food cooked by non-devotees. I mean, if they give me fruit, that's all right. And Prabhupada was very strong when he went strict about that. When he went to people's homes, if they didn't have the right consciousness, he would just take fruit. So, any other questions? Yeah.
What about the quality of food being brown? Would that also make a difference in our consciousness?
Yes, it definitely does.
Conventional
food or devotees? Yeah, I mean, there's definitely is a difference in consciousness. If devotees can grow their own food, that is better. It'll taste better. I mean, I know the food, the vegetables that are grown in Braj, they taste fantastically. Has anyone eaten spinach in Govardhan or Braj? Tastes different, doesn't it? It has a really nice taste to it. Even sometimes I buy the greens that are meant for cows and I cook them for myself. And they taste better than the spinach you get here in the West. It's because it's all being grown by Brajabasis. So yes, it's better to grow things ourselves. I mean, you have to be practical. You can have a garden on the roof. You can grow a lot in a small space. You can get it. We were talking yesterday how many times in the city there are these little gardens. You can rent a little piece of land. In Denmark, there's one devotee. His name is Litanath. He has land. He has a little piece of land about one block from the temple. And he's growing enough food to supply the temple with practically all their vegetables. Pretty good, isn't it? Just a little tiny plot of land. You know, city garden like that. So there's ways to do that. It may not be practical. I'm not saying you have to do that. But the more you can do things practically and naturally, the better things will be. Better the consciousness will be. So, any other questions? Yeah.
I like the way you described Vaishya, how he acts. You give some examples of other
varnas?
Yes, how they act.
Well, I mean, Kshatriya, I gave the example of Arjuna as a Kshatriya. He would fight. you know, he's forced to fight by his nature or forced to defend by his nature. And a Brahmin, whatever you do with the Brahmin, you know, he's just going to be, he'll preach Krishna consciousness or he'll engage in formidable activities. And a Shudra will be just sleep. So you can tell someone's varna like that. It's very easy. Like if someone has trouble sleeping, you can't wake them up in the morning. That's a Shudra tendency. Do you ever see people like that? You just wake them up. Time to wake up. Oh. Wake up, Prabhu. Mangalarti. Oh. And finally you get them up and they're rubbing their eyes. Where am I? You're in the Hare Krishna temple. Hare Krishna, what's that? then you know you're dealing with a Shudra. Does that make sense? All right. And if someone rises immediately, then it's, they're more brahminically or kshatriya inclined. Prabhupada said, Chanaka Pandit says we should sleep like a dog. And the reason he said that is that you've ever seen a dog sleeping and then you walk by or make some noise, he jumps up immediately. Rah, 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 rah. Like that. So that's how a devotee should sleep. Like immediately the alarm goes off or time for Mangalarti. Hey, whoa! Are the brahmacharis like that here? No. Time to get up. You know, Hare Krishna. And the way you can be like that when you're sleeping is that when you go to sleep, you do some Krishna katha on the way to go to sleep. You know, you read something, you chant a round before you go to sleep. An extra round won't hurt you to chant an extra round. Won't kill you. And you do something Krishna conscious, Krishna katha, and then you wake up. Wow, Krishna. You know, that, like in the old days, we used to read Krishna book with each other before we took rest. We used to take milk, sometimes cookies, banana, things like that. And then we wake up very ecstatic. It was very nice. Okay, it's time for prasadam. We're talking about prasadam, but we forgot about it. So all glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada.